And thank you so much for joining us today. Welcome. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and you're right here at Progressive Radio Network, which brings you information, cutting-edge information about natural medicine and topics in truth, things that you need to learn about. And today we're very interested in seeing what's going on in terms of what the pharmaceutical industry is up to in terms of natural lifestyle choices. For instance, one of the things that we see happen currently is that there are a lot of press releases that are against using natural therapies, and then at the same time the pharmaceutical industry is actually purchasing large natural product manufacturers. An example of this is the fact that the company known as New Chapter was recently purchased by Procter and Gamble. So I find that a very interesting occurrence, having been in this industry since 1964. And for myself and my patients, my cells, my family, we've always been looking at all kinds of ways that we can integrate natural therapies into our life. And very often that includes specifically not choosing products that are manufactured by some of these mainstream companies that are very quick to add any kind of genetically modified product, any kind of toxin such as triclosan, which is a toxic antibiotic that actually increases the production of resistant strains. And as a professor at a medical school, which I am, I'm often sharing that kind of scientific facts with the faculty because they seem to be very, very isolated and ignorant and do not attain a high level of knowledge of why, for instance, there would be a big spread of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So along with all of those things that you can learn more about right here on Progressive Radio Network, you can always visit the archives, and you can find out so much information from many of the hosts and guests that they feature at Progressive Radio Network. How you can come on board is just go to prn.fm and scroll down to any show of your choice. You're here today with the Natural Nurse, and we're at Natural Nurse on the archives. I believe we're right with an N now. They used to have it with a T for the Natural Nurse, but they changed it to N for just Natural Nurse. And today we're going to talk about exercise as well as spirituality, because along with things like supplements and healthy food, where we place our mind and our body are paramount in terms of maintaining a high level of wellness. So with that, I'd like to introduce our guest for today, Mr. Max Popov. He is the author of Weight Resistance Yoga, Practicing Embodied Spirituality. And Max is a fitness trainer and scholar of modern yoga. He actually developed weight resistance yoga in the late 1980s by applying the teachings of BKS Iyengar, and I always take Iyengar yoga classes personally, to the strength training teachings of famed 1920s Indian bodybuilder K.V. Iyer. Applying the wisdom of Hatha Yoga to fitness lifting exercises, Max Popov's Weight Resistance Yoga, Practicing Embodied Spirituality, reveals the path to transforming strength training sessions into a mindful, calm, and meditative yoga practice. So we are going to bring on board right now Mr. Max Popov. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Hi, Ellen. I'm happy to be here.
Now let's go back in time, because you've been practicing all of these kinds of resistance and spirituality and yoga a very long time. What led to your interest in this topic?
Well, in 1986, I began to perform yoga in earnest. I discovered Iyengar yoga. I went to the very first Iyengar yoga center in New York City. It was in Soho. Before I took Iyengar yoga, I was very unhappy with my classes. When I began to take Iyengar yoga, I discovered exactly what I wanted. Iyengar yoga is very precise and rigorous.
And what led to your interest in this whole realm of spirituality and yoga in the first place? Because back in those days, not everybody was running to yoga classes like they are now.
I didn't think of it as being a spiritual discipline at first. I thought of it as being flexibility exercises.
Okay.
So only gradually did I find for myself that it was a mindfulness exercise and even a meditative exercise.
Well, when you talk about pumping iron, because I know you're talking about weight resistance, and it's quite unusual to have the term weight resistance along with the concepts of yoga together in the same thought. So pumping iron doesn't seem like something that would be considered a yogic practice.
Weight resistance yoga is a form of hatha yoga that substitutes strengthening exercises for the flexibility postures. So during a session, on a physical level, it's strengthening exercises. On a mental level, it's what you might call mindfulness or total absorption or full concentration. And on the spiritual level, it's a meditation, a moving meditation. For the beginners, it takes about 6 months to accomplish the physical stage, another 6 for the mindfulness stage, and then another 6 months for the meditation phase.
And then integrating them all together. Well, if we're talking about the physical...
Then they're integrated within the session.
Okay. So if let's talk about, first of all, like you brought it up, in that way, physical level first. So how is weight resistance yoga different from what's called iron yoga?
Yes. Weight resistance, well, iron yoga, I should say, is working out with light dumbbells while simultaneously performing yogic postures. And this is done in a group class in a studio. Weight resistance yoga, in contrast, is practiced individually, not in a group. It's performed in a gym, not in a studio, and it consists of strengthening exercises only. There are no flexibility exercises. I should say there's an exception to that when students come to me with postural problems, I assign to them both strengthening and flexibility exercises. So that incorporates weight resistance yoga and what I call weight surrender yoga, what people think of as the regular kind of yoga, doing asanas.
Well, let's define the term asana, because although you and I are certainly familiar with that term, maybe some of our listeners are not.
Asanas are the yogic postures.
That's just a name that's used to describe them.
Yes.
Now, you just told us that iron yoga is something which might be done in a group class and that it might be done with light dumbbells while simultaneously performing these asanas or yogic postures. And yet, according to your opinion, you feel that this is not efficient, effective, and not even particularly safe. Why do you say that?
Yes, I think that lifting dumbbells while performing asanas is well, dumb. weight resistance yoga complements what I call weight surrender yoga. The iron yoga replaces weight surrender yoga. I think you have to do both. You have to do the yogic flexibility exercises, and you have to do the yogic strengthening exercises. And for that, you need a full range of equipment found in a well-equipped gym, the machines, the dumbbells, the calisthenics apparatus.
In order to make the best use of both worlds.
Yes, and do you know, any amount of overload, overload is the amount of resistance greater than what we're used to in our everyday life. Any amount of overload results in strength development, but a higher intensity effort produces a greater effect. So using light dumbbells doesn't do the job. You have to work out at a high intensity and achieve what's called muscle fatigue or muscle failure. That just means that after you lift a weight 10 times, you can't lift anymore. That's the kind of protocol that you have to put in place. If you lift, if you lift dumbbells, light dumbbells, 40 times, that's not as efficient as lifting a heavier weight 10 times. If you lift dumbbells, light dumbbells 10 times, that's not as effective as lifting a heavier weight 10 times. Also, there are many dumbbell exercises that are best done sitting down, sitting in a chair, sitting in a slanted chair. If you are standing and you lift weights overhead, you tend to lurch your back. And if you are standing, the weight, the gravity, falls straight down on your vertebral column. So you're better off seated, a little bit slanted back. That's safer. So weight resistance yoga, which uses all the equipment in a gym, is more efficient, more effective, and safer.
So would you say that weight resistance yoga is based on traditional strength training principles?
It's very much based on traditional strength training principles. Absolutely. Types of strength training protocol vary. Weight resistance yoga is a form of high-intensity training developed by Arthur Jones, who founded Nautilus in the 1970s. And the fundamental principles of high-intensity training include a high level of effort. High intensity is, 80% of your maximum. If you can lift 100-pound dumbbell one time, then you can lift 80% of your maximum, 8 or 10 or 12 times. So weight resistance yoga is high intensity, about 80% or 85% of your maximum. And by the way, this is a protocol that applies to women as well as men. Women are not as capable of men of developing strength, but they can develop strength relative to their total muscle mass. So women...
Well, I think that's true about men as well. Some men who are born with greater strength originally. Everybody can increase strength from their starting point.
Yes, that's so. And by the way, especially so for elderly people.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of research looking at even elderly people who are wheelchair bound, and then they begin some kind of strength training exercise, and there's some really major benefits. Are you familiar with any of those studies?
I read a little about that, but I do know that that's so. We begin to lose muscle mass around age 30, so strength training is very important, and it's never too late to begin it.
Yeah, that's some of the best news, so people don't have to feel like they missed a boat if they did not keep up from the time that they were young until whatever age they are now.
Yes, absolutely.
Now,
I just want to say, in any case, so women should lift at a high intensity, too. Please let me tell you about some more of the protocol that was developed by Jones.
So what year did you say that was in?
It was in the 1970s.
Okay, not that long ago.
So you lifted a high level of effort. You only have to do one set. This business that we see at gyms where men, mostly men, are doing three sets, that's to make the muscles pop up. That's for looks. If you're only concerned with strength training, one set is enough if you perform it at a high intensity. I suggest 8 to 12 repetitions, not fewer and not more. This protocol has a moderately slow lifting cadence. That's 6 to 7 seconds per repetition. It also has the session is relatively brief, about 50 minutes. It consists of about 12 exercises. I think that four sessions a week is optimal. You can do less. Not all of us have time for four sessions. A weekly session, a weekly schedule should include all of the major muscles, including muscles of the neck, the shoulder blades, the hips, and the shins. These are commonly ignored by weightlifters because they're not glamour muscles. And the weekly schedule should allow for parts of the body to recuperate, so you wouldn't work the same parts of the body in consecutive days. And lastly, this protocol it consists of exercises that aren't performed the same way twice within a week. And this is accomplished in part by using different kinds of machinery. So I have different routines. I have a free weight routine. Free weights are the dumbbells and the barbells. And I have a cable and pulley machine routine. These are the machines that you pull in various directions with cables. And then I have another routine with lever arm and cam machines. These are the Nautilus machines. They have that Nautilus shape in them. They have a gizmo in them. That's a Nautilus shape. And your movement trajectory is very specific and prescribed. All of this kind of machinery, all of this kind of equipment is valuable. It all has its drawbacks and all has its benefits, but I think it's good to do a variety.
Now, you talk about the three different aspects that someone might be working on: strength, flexibility and aerobic capacity. Where is the aerobic capacity? Would that mean also taking a different kind of class, or is that built into weight resistance yoga?
It is not built into weight resistance yoga. Some gyms advertise a circuit and claim that if you do it quickly enough, that's an aerobic exercise. It's not. An aerobic exercise must be done separately. You must swim or bicycle. I myself run. I've been jogging since the early 1970s. So I practice weight resistance yoga. I practice what I call weight surrender yoga, the regular yoga, and I do an aerobic activity. I run. You have to do all three.
So let me ask you this. How would people who have time constraints, for instance, let's say a woman who has a full-time job and two little children at home. That's a pretty busy day. She leaves the house at 6 o'clock in the morning, gets home at 7 o'clock at night, then has to cook dinner and take care of the kids. Where could someone like that fit this kind of exercise regimen into their life?
Oh, boy, Ellen. Do you have a suggestion for that?
I do, because I have a life like that and have always managed to put exercise into my life as well. But
yeah.
Not
how do you do it?
Well, how I do it, for one thing, is I, instead of, let's say, going out to eat for lunch during a lunch break at work, mm-hmm. I actually go out and exercise for that hour.
Mm-hmm.
But that has to involve getting to the place. What I do is outside exercise in nice weather and in a local gym in cooler weather. But that time has to include changing, you know. So you can't get a full long routine like you're talking about in. The other thing I do is while I'm driving, I have actually weights in the car, and I also use the steering wheel as a resistance implement.
Pardon me, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I do. And then I also will go to a yoga class or do it at home with, you know, a tape. I used to like to use Lilius a lot, but I usually go to an Iyengar class about 2 to 3 times a week.
Aha.
But, you know, you're talking about putting quite a bit of time into this. If you're talking about, you know, several times a week and then you have to also work on the aerobics. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, you know, a lot of people don't have that kind of time to indulge in themselves right now. So I always like to bring it to their attention how they can build this into their life.
This is a difficulty. This is a difficulty. I myself perform the strength training very early in the day. I do that first thing in the day. And I also have gone to a gym during lunchtime to do an aerobic activity, to run on a treadmill, or even to go off for a jog. And I tend to do my yogic flexibility exercises in the evening and on the weekends.
Right, so you're fitting it in. Now, we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z so people can hear about some of the other great programming right here on Gary Knowles Network, Progressive Radio Network. You can always visit us at naturalnurse.com. Just go online or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We love to hear from you, your suggestions and comments, and we're very happy that you're joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'll be right back. Thank you so much for joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, right here on Progressive Radio Network. That's PRN.FM. And once you're there, it opens up to our brand new revised website. You can go to archives, find Natural Nurse, and all the shows that we've been doing are posted there. I think they hold them on board, not only our show, but all the other shows available on Progressive Radio Network. They hold them there for quite a number of weeks. Of course, we have actually hundreds of shows that Dr. Zamperin and I have done over many, many years. And you can find out more by visiting naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We also do a lot of lectures on ground. That means where we can actually meet you face-to-face. And I was very excited to recently be doing a presentation in Florida. And several people came to the lectures that I was giving in various stores saying, hey, I listen to you all the time on Gary Null's network. So that's always fun. And by the way, we have a very busy lecture schedule coming up. You can go to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z under schedules to find out when we'll be doing a live presentation right by you. In fact, we have an exciting herbal lecture coming up at the New York Botanical Gardens and another one at the Long Island Small Farm Summit, and that's just in the next week or two. So we have stuff going on pretty much every single day. So just go to naturalnurse.com under schedules, and we'd love to meet you in person. Today we have as our guest the author of an interesting book that can definitely get you in shape both physically and spiritually, and that is Max Popov. We're talking about his book, Weight Resistance Yoga, Practicing Embodied Spirituality. And Max, what do we mean by that, embodied spirituality?
Well, I've mentioned that there are three levels to weight resistance yoga, and one of them is the physical level and one is the mental level, and the third is a spiritual level. This that's a meditative level. These meditations are not based on traditional subjects. For example, Vishnu or fire. Instead, the subject of the meditations is the exercises themselves. So the book has 20 meditations, and each of these meditations springs from the exercise itself.
It's interesting because when I was reviewing it, it reminded me of, and you do have a picture on the front cover that certainly would relate to what's called the chakra system.
Yes.
And so tell us what that is about, what the picture on the cover means in terms of the chakras, because that's a word that's thrown around a lot, so I'd like your interpretation of it. And then is that where you develop these meditations from?
Well, I can't give you an interpretation of the chakras, although I made many suggestions for the cover, and they were taken. That was an element that the publishing company put on.
Okay, it's very pretty too. But now let's just mention what those are, because not everybody even knows what the word might mean.
So let me say again, though, that the chakras are not something that I consider as part of my practice, but they are places on the body that symbolize various spiritual levels.
Right. Now, when you're looking at what you're doing, here's an interesting one. We're looking at the trunk, and everybody sort of knows what their trunk is. And you're talking about meditations on the trunk. So is this what you would do, let's say, internally in your mind while you're doing exercises for the spinal column and the abdominal wall?
when I do trunk exercises, I'm especially aware of my skeleton and very specifically my spine. The exercises for the trunk are abdominal curls, side curls, side twists, and back extension exercises. So when you say, for example, a back extension exercise, this is done on an apparatus called a Roman chair. You face down as you lie on this slanted chair. Your legs are fixed, and your arms are crossed over your chest, or you may be holding a light dumbbell. So your limbs are not involved at all. What's involved is just the trunk. So when you do this kind of exercise, you are very aware of your spine. For me, I feel like a fish. I have a sense of my ancestors, who are all vertebrates, going from mammals to amphibians and reptiles to fish. So I have a sense of vast time going back, but I also have a sense of how my skeleton reminds me of my mortality. When I die, that's what's going to be left. So I have this, as I'm doing this exercise, I have a sense of my mortality in my very bones. And this gives me a sense of the fleetingness of life and an appreciation for life. So this is a comprehension of a reality that takes place during the exercise. It's not a comprehension of reality that we can ordinarily have. We're too busy during the day. We have so many tasks to take care of. We have to think about clock time and watch time and calendar time.
Well, you're discussing your interest in the fact that the idea of a fish comes to you working on the spine reminds me of the basic scientific concept called phylogeny recapitulates ontogeny. So where we're actually looking at the development of the individual often mirrors the development of the species.
Yes, that's so. And actually, that's something that I write about, not in reference to the trunk, but elsewhere. So we've left out a very important step, Ellen. There's the physical level, and then there's the mindfulness level, the full absorption level. Then there's the meditation level.
Good. So why don't you tell us about that middle level, or the next thing after the physical, which would be the mindfulness level?
Yeah. As anyone who's looked around in a gym can testify, the weightlifting milieu is largely made up of grunting men, red-faced and straining, using herky-jerky movements. Weight-resistance yogins perform each exercise moderately slow and with controlled movements. We keep our mouths shut because we're breathing through our nose. We have a calm expression. And we perform the exercises within a stillness. The movements take place within stillness. So we consider the whole body. So parts not involved in the targeted movement are relaxed and other parts are stabilized. So the body is still, either through relaxation or stabilization, and we concentrate on the movements. And because we are concentrating on the movements, we are coordinating the movements with deep nasal breathing, we become fully absorbed in the exercise. We lose sense of our everyday tasks. We take care of this task at hand. This stage is important. If this stage is not fully addressed, then we can't go on to the meditative phase.
And are there special exercises, that there are mental exercises that I would imagine that someone could perform to get more adept at the mindfulness stage?
Well, it's a matter of fully paying attention to what you're doing. Yoga, what makes yoga yoga to a great degree is that it's practical. It uses techniques. That's what distinguishes it from the philosophy that preceded it. So rhythmic breathing, sitting in a still posture, those are yogic techniques. And perhaps the greatest yogic technique is full concentration. So in this case, in this kind of yoga, the full concentration is on the stillness and the movement of the exercises.
Well, is there something that someone should actually have in their mind while they are doing the exercises?
I think what happens when you do the exercises with care, when you do the exercises precisely, a tranquility results. You dwell within your body. That facilitates moving on to the meditative stage. What happens willy-nilly is that you begin to comprehend realities that you ordinarily don't comprehend in everyday life. I mentioned about the spine and having a sense of our mortality. Let me give you a simpler example. In Iyengar yoga classes, there's a lot of attention paid to the feet. So in standing in Tadasana, the mountain pose, the teacher recommends that we are balanced on both the front and the back and both sides of our feet. Our toes are spread, our feet are parallel. That's a physical instruction. Sometimes what we feel is we're rooted in the earth. We don't always feel this, but sometimes willy-nilly we have this this deep feeling that we are grounded in the earth and we are reaching up to the heavens.
Now, I know you're working on other additional exposés and books. One in particular is called Radiant Bodies, The Origin of Modern Hatha Yoga, and that comes from your interest as being a scholar of yoga. So what is that about?
Well, yes, I didn't mention to you very early on when you asked about how I developed weight-resistance yoga. I didn't mention to you that that I began the Iyengar yoga, and very soon after I began the Iyengar yoga, I began to go to a local gym where I lifted weights. And what I did was I applied what I learned in the yoga class to the weightlifting. And I didn't know anyone who both took yoga classes and lifted weights. In 1994, I read a biography of a famous bodybuilder named Eugene Sandow. This is a book written by David Chapman. And in Chapman's book, he mentioned K.V. Iyer. K.V. Iyer was a renowned Indian bodybuilder. K.V. Iyer opened a gym called the Hercules Gymnasium in 1922 in Bangalore. There, Iyer taught both bodybuilding and yoga. I was electrified by this. Iyer was teaching what I was practicing, and at that point teaching myself, 50 years before I was doing it, and I had no idea that anyone had done this before. We think of yoga classes in gymnasiums as being something new, but it isn't. Through my interest in Iyer, I began to find out more about the origins of yoga. I began to research yoga, and what I found out was that although Hatha Yoga is thought to be a pure ancient Indian spiritual discipline that transcends cultural, temporal, and spatial boundaries, or it's considered to be a spiritual discipline that was corrupted by Indians for export or Westerners for import to accommodate Westerners, what I found out was that Hatha Yoga, as we know it, was created in India in the teens and 1920s, and it was powerfully influenced by Western trends. That's what my book Radiant Bodies is about.
Well, what are some of the interesting concepts that you discovered that were, you know, very ancient, which are now being brought basically to be more broadly absorbable by Westerners as well?
Well, until the teens, the asanas, the yogic postures that we perform, were considered conditioning exercises in preparation for seated meditation. In the teens and the 1920s, in India, yogis began to bring the conditioning exercises to the forefront, making yoga into an exercise routine. This was something new. They were very influenced by many trends. Certainly, a very important one was the physical culture movement. So there was, which is practically the same as the what we think of as being New Age.
Well, I love the physical culture movement, and in fact, I've had as a guest on my show here Mr. Dan Laurie, who is still alive and well and still lifting weights in his, you know, later years. And he's the one who actually brought weightlifting very much so to this country, and even developed the weights. I'm sure you're familiar with them.
No, I'm not. So this is something that I'll investigate.
Well, he wrote an excellent book on physical culture, and so did Randy Roach, which is called Smoke and Mirrors. So there's a lot of great information on the history of physical culture. I just even love that word.
I'll put that on my list of books to read. In 1904, a man named J.P. Muller published a home exercise book about calisthenics called My System, 50 Minutes to Work a Day for Health's Sake. So before this book, people practiced calisthenics on fields or in classes in great numbers, and he came up with this a home exercise book with a few simple exercises so people could practice on their own on a daily basis. This book was a very big influence on someone called Sri Iyengar. Yogendra. Yogendra was one of the pioneer modern Hatha yogi teachers. He is one of the people who transformed yoga in the early 20th century in India. And what he did was that he came up with a yoga routine that was modeled on the Muller routine. So yogis had been performing, who knows, we don't have much literature on this, but maybe 20 or 40 or maybe even 84 conditioning asanas before their seated meditation. Yogendra suggested about a dozen exercises. They were all simple. Asanas had been simplified before, but not a whole routine of them. And he wrote a book about this in the 1920s. It's also the case that most of Muller's exercises were standing exercises. There were no yoga standing exercises before the early 20th century. Yogendra included standing exercises in his yoga routine. And lastly, Muller suggested rhythmic breathing that corresponded with the exercise movements. No one had ever suggested rhythmic breathing coordinated with the yogic conditioning exercises before. Yogendra did that. So this whole notion of breathing in and out in coordination with your movements in yoga is something that's very new. The standing exercises are very new. A routine of a dozen or so exercises that you could do by yourself, that's all new. And that was all influenced by physical culture.
So it was already sort of a blending of both worlds, right, as it came into being.
Yes. Yeah. We think of yoga as being ancient and pure, but it isn't by any means. It was changed in India to appeal to middle-class Indians, people who couldn't or didn't want to go off to ashrams and give up their lives. They wanted some kind of simple exercise routine that they could do.
Right, so that's interesting. It's bringing it back to the physical when a lot of people feel that it was more spiritual. So that's a very interesting sort of change of concept.
While the pioneer yogis got a lot of flack for that, there were people who said, you are making yoga into gymnastics. This isn't yoga at all. It doesn't have a spiritual element. One of the things that Iyengar did was that he said in a book that he published in 1988, he said that all of the spiritual steps, all of the steps of the yoga path, are contained within asana. This is what helped clarify for me what embodied spirituality is. Iyengar said that he didn't go sit and meditate. He was doing a moving meditation.
Right, and that brings us to a broader audience who might want to incorporate what you're talking about here in your book, which is the wisdom of applying hatha yoga to weightlifting exercises.
Yes, exactly.
So you're kind of, you know, bringing it full circle. Now, the book is illustrated, so for people who are wondering what you were talking about in terms of some of the machines, you know, it's a little hard to discuss that, of course, because this is not a visual. This is a radio show. But your book is fully annotated with exact photos of how to perform these exercises.
Yes,
and how to do them simply.
Not photos, but lovely drawings.
Right.
Yes.
Drawing of how to do it, and it makes it, you know, very easy. It's very easy to follow. I don't know who illustrated it, but they're very clearly done. And then you're also looking at some of these meditations, like on mortality, introduction to the trunk, on nonviolence during the back raise. Boy, that's something that the whole world should maybe work on right now. On the withdrawal from, you know, the everyday life through an ab curl. So it's a very interesting concept that brings together concepts of mindfulness and spirituality along with really good physical exercises.
Yes, thank you. I think that it does.
And what's your next project?
Well, my next project is the Radiant Bodies, the Cultural History of Yoga. I am finishing that. I hope that I'll be done very soon, within the next few weeks.
Well, great. I wish you the best of luck on it, and thank you so much for being our guest today here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I would like to tell you, listeners, that you can always find out more by going to naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. And, of course, one of the great things about Gary Null's network right here on Progressive Radio Network is that you can join in any time, day or night, by just going to prn.fm, scroll down to your favorite show. We're The Natural Nurse, but there's other great shows here, and listen in. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.